So you're looking for a dental practice to buy, and you want to know, what kind of practice am I looking for? What is the ideal practice to buy? Today, we're going to break down exactly what the perfect practice to buy looks like. Are you going to find a practice that checks off every single one of these boxes? Most likely not, but your goal is to find a practice that is as close as possible to these ideals. And if you're able to do that, you are going to make your life so much easier. You're going to make the transition into being a not only an owner, but a profitable owner, so much quicker and so much easier if you follow these steps. The following 7 criteria are going to give you a clear picture of what you are looking for when you're trying to buy a dental practice. All right, 1, this is the most important part of buying a dental practice, and a lot of dentists seem to kind of ignore this. Active patients. You want to find a practice that has between 1,000 and 2,000 active patients if you are going to be working as a solo doctor. When you buy a practice, you're essentially buying access to patients. That is what you are paying for. So the more patients that you have at a practice, the more valuable that practice is going to be. The average dentist is able to produce about $500 to $1,000 per patient. If you're doing a lot of specialty procedures and you're really good at treatment planning and case acceptance, you're gonna be closer to $1,000. I've seen some dentists go a little bit over that. If you're not really that good at treatment planning and you're not doing specialty procedures, you're not doing implants, Invisalign, et cetera, then you might be below $500, but you're gonna be somewhere in that $500 to $1,000 range. So let's say you have a practice with 1,500 patients and you're producing $650 per patient per year. So multiplying that out, that's gonna be $975,000 in annual revenue. So basically about $1 million a year. So let's assume that there's an overhead of 60% at this practice so that you're keeping 40%. That's $390,000 per year in income, in take-home pay. So that's a good income. That's realistic for a dentist to make. But let's say you have fewer patients. Let's say you only have 750 patients. Now, instead of having to produce $650 per year per patient, you're now going to have to produce $1,300 per patient in order to make that same amount of money. Producing $650 per year is really not that hard. Right off the bat, if they're coming in for their hygiene exams and radiographs, that's gonna be about $300 a year right there. So that means your actual production doing procedures per patient is only about $350 per year. That means you could do like one crown every 2 to 3 years, or you could do, you know, 1 or 2 fillings per year. Maybe you do a night guard. Maybe you do some Invisalign. If a patient is paying $5,000 for Invisalign, you know, of course you're gonna have maybe $2,000 in lab fees, but that's $3,000 right there. That's 5 years covered for that patient. Hitting $650 per year is really not that difficult. But if you're trying to produce $1,300 per patient, that becomes a lot more difficult. That's twice the amount of work that you're gonna have to do, but it's more than twice because hygiene is still gonna be about $300. So now instead of having to produce about $300 per patient, you're now having to produce $900 per patient. So you're having to do 3 times as much work by having half as many patients. Ultimately, the rule is very simple. The more patients you have, the more possibilities you are going to have to find treatment, and the higher your production is going to be. It's really that simple. But you also want to keep in mind that more patients means more hygiene production, and hygiene production is money that you're getting without doing much work. Yeah, you have to do the exam, but the majority of the time during that hygiene appointment is going to be with the hygienist. So the more patients you can have on your hygiene schedule, the more profitable your practice is going to be. 2, let's talk about production. So many dentists get this wrong. You do not want to buy a practice because it has a high production or a high collections number. You can't just look at the production of a practice and times it by a percentage and say, well, that's how much this practice is worth. An actual practice is so much more complicated than just one single production number. The truth is that if the production number is too high, that's actually a red flag, and I would be careful about buying a practice where the production is too high. What actually matters with production is you want to have as low as possible a production per active patient. Remember, we said the average dentist can produce about $500 to $1,000 per year per active patient. So if you find a practice where the previous dentist was producing $1,200 a year per patient, you're probably not going to be able to replicate that. And then guess what? You're going to be lowering the production of that practice right away. You're going to step in and right away be losing money. But if you can find a practice where the dentist was only doing 250, 300, 350 a year in production per patient. If you come in and you can up that to 600, 700, 800 per year per patient, all of a sudden you've doubled the size of the practice and you haven't even had to do any marketing to get new patients through the door. The ideal practice is a practice where the dentist has a lot of active patients. He's been in town for 20, 30 years. He has all sorts of relationships and connections, and patients have been coming to see him for years and years. The parents and the grandparents have been coming, and their kids have been coming, and there's whole families coming to this practice. They're very comfortable coming to this practice. But the dentist has been getting older. He's been slowing down. Maybe his eyesight has been going down. Maybe he's been getting a little lazy. Maybe he's been going on vacations and hasn't felt like treatment planning. Maybe he just has enough money and doesn't really feel like he needs to work that hard. And so there's a ton of patients at this practice that have a bunch of undiagnosed treatment. If you can find a practice where the dentist wasn't diagnosing very much, you come in and all of a sudden you're able to diagnose crowns and fillings and ortho and root canals and extractions and implants and all sorts of things that the previous dentist wasn't doing. And all of a sudden you've dramatically increased the value of this practice and you're right away making a lot of money. If on the other hand, you come to a practice where the seller had gotten this idea in his head, hey, I need to increase the production at my practice right before I sell it so that I can get more money for it, so that it appears more valuable. Literally, sellers will do this, and brokers will sometimes tell sellers to do this. They say, hey, are you going to be selling within the next few years? Well, then you should focus on doing as many crowns and as much work as you can as possible so that you can make some money before you retire and also increase the value of your practice. Do not fall for this trick. You do not want to buy a practice where there are only 500 active patients, but the seller is somehow producing $800,000. That is going to put you in a terrible situation where you take over the practice and the dentist had already done all the crowns, had already done all the fillings, has already done Invisalign on the patients, has already done all the implants, and you come in and there's not going to be any work for you to do. You're simply going to be doing these exams on patients, and the patients say, well, yeah, I just did 5 crowns last year. I'm not ready to do anything else this year. Yeah, because they've already been over treatment planned. And so now you are going to have to spend your money in order to market to get new patients into this practice. Why did you even buy a practice if the patients have already had all their work done? You are trying to buy a practice where the patients are going to need you right away, that you're going to come in and there's going to be a ton of work that needs to be done. That is the reason that you do not want to buy a practice with a low number of active patients, but a high production number. You want to find a practice with a high number of active patients and a low production. Number 3, in the ideal practice, the seller has been referring out a lot of procedures and not doing any specialty work. Ideally, they're not doing extractions, they're not doing root canals, they're not doing implants, they're not doing any type of Invisalign. You want to find a practice where the dentist is doing as minimal work as possible, ideally just bread and butter. If you can find a practice where the dentist is primarily doing fillings, that's ideal. A great practice to buy is a practice in which the seller had been doing MODBL amalgams. You come in and there are going to be so many patients coming every single week because their large MOD amalgams have fractured and they need to have crowns. If you find a practice where the dentist had been doing MODBL amalgams for the last 20 years, you are going to have so much work that you're not even going to know what to do with yourself. However, on the other hand, if you buy a practice where the dentist had been doing veneers on all the patients and doing Invisalign on all the patients and had been doing implants and had been literally treatment planning every single thing that patient could possibly need, you're going to come in and there's not going to be much work for you on the schedule. Try to find a practice where you can come in and add value. If the dentist before you had not been doing implants and you're able to place implants, that's a value add right there. If the dentist before you had not been doing veneers and cosmetic work, that's a value add right there. Try to find things that you can do that the seller wasn't doing, because that's instantly a way to bring additional value to this practice and raise the production. Finally, the fourth thing to look at when buying a dental practice is you want to look at the team members at this practice. You want to see how long they've been there, and you want to try to get an idea of if they are going to be staying after the transition. There's absolutely no way to guarantee that the staff are going to stay. If they end up not staying, you're going to figure it out. It's going to be fine. But if you're able to have the staff stay for as long as possible, that is going to make your life so much easier. Ideally, you want to see that the current staff have been at the practice for at least 5 years. This shows that there is some stability at the practice. When you take over the office, some of the patients are going to initially be a little bit uncomfortable because they don't know you. But if they're showing up to an office where they recognize everyone else, the front desk people, the assistants, the hygienists, maybe they are friends with the hygienist, or maybe they're friends with one of the front desk people, that's going to be to your advantage, because the patients, even though they don't know you, they're still going to be comfortable with the rest of the team at the practice. But if you buy a practice with no staff there, then the patients are going to show up and they don't know who you are. They don't know anyone there. They might be like, well, why would I even schedule here? I actually have a dentist that's closer to my house. I'm just going to schedule with them. If they have no connection with the practice, there's not a high probability that they're going to return. And you cannot guarantee that patients are going to return. So you are trying to do everything that you can to push the odds in your favor that as many of the patients that were seeing the previous dentist are going to stay and continue seeing you. And the easiest way to assure that is to assure that the staff are going to be staying throughout the transition. If the majority of the team members have been there less than a year, that's also kind of a red flag, because it means that for some reason this dentist was doing things that staff didn't want to stay. You're looking for a stable situation. When you buy a dental practice, you are buying stability. If you are looking for a lot of variability and risk, well, then you might as well just do a startup and save a little bit of money. But you are buying a dental practice. You're paying extra to buy a dental practice because you are trying to buy stability. You're trying to buy an assurance that you're going to come in, have patients, and be making money on the first day of ownership. Next thing to look at is the hygiene schedule. You want to buy a practice where there are two full-time hygienists at the practice. A typical hygienist, if she's working 48 weeks, 4 days per week, and seeing a patient every 6 months, is going to be able to handle about 768 patients per year. Remember that an active patient is going to be coming to the practice every 6 months for their cleaning appointment. We said our goal is to find a practice with between 1,000 and 2,000 active patients. So if the dentist says that he has 2,000 active patients, but only has one hygienist, that's not possible. A single hygienist cannot see 2,000 active patients per year. It just doesn't work out that way. She wouldn't have enough time. She'd have to be working from 8 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night and seeing patients every 30 minutes. To support a patient base of 1,000 to 2,000 active patients, you are going to need at least two hygienists. Typically, dentists who are making between $400,000 and $600,000 a year have 2 to 2.5, sometimes three hygienists. Once you start getting to three hygienists, that's when you're starting to get to the point that you have more than 2,000 active patients, and that's when you might want to consider hiring an associate to come and work at your practice. But assuming you have around that 1,500 active patient number, that's going to be perfect for two hygienists and one solo doctor to see and to make a very good living, you know, $400,000 to $600,000 a year. Next thing is that you want to look at the patient insurance mix. Understanding the insurance mix at a practice is extremely important. Ideally, you want to find a practice that is seeing between 50 and 75% PPO insurance plan patients and about 25% cash paying patients. That's going to be your ideal. That's going to be kind of a good amount, a good ratio of insurance to cash paying patients. You want to be very careful if the practice is seeing HMO patients or Medicaid patients. If you want to do service for your community and see Medicaid, that's great. I think you should do it if that's important to you. But you got to understand that if you're going to make that sacrifice, it's going to be a sacrifice, and you're going to be seeing more patients and making less money. If your goal is to maximize the value of your time, you do not want to see HMO patients or Medicaid patients. What you want to do is you want to find a practice that has a good mix of PPO and cash paying patients. Contrary to popular belief, buying a practice that is fee for service or a practice that is not in network with any insurance companies can actually be pretty risky, and I generally would not recommend it as your first option. The problem with fee for service practices is that because the patients are paying in cash, they can literally go anywhere. And oftentimes those patients are there because they have a relationship with the dentist. Maybe they're family friends. Maybe the dentist is able to do some sort of crazy procedures that most dentists aren't able to do, so the patients are specifically going to see that dentist. They've built up relationships with the dentist over time. Maybe the dentist used to be in network, but they dropped their insurance plans in order to keep a higher percentage of their collections, which is a great idea to do long term. But when you're buying a practice, if you take over a practice where the dentist had done that, you're not necessarily going to have that type of goodwill with the patients. And the patients might realize, hey, I already have this insurance plan. I'm paying twice as much to see this dentist because he's a family friend. But now that there's a new dentist taking over, I'm just going to go across the street to the other dentist that's in network with my insurance plan and pay half as much and get free cleanings. Unless you're in a very, very rural area where there is very little competition, most dentists are going to have to end up going in network with insurance plans. And so you're going to be collecting less per patient than the seller was able to collect. If everything else about the practice is perfect except for the fact that it's fee for service, maybe it's still a good option to buy, but just keep in mind that you are going to be making less money than the seller was making. So if you're buying a practice that's doing $1 million in production, you need to keep in mind that for you, that practice might only be a $600,000 in production practice. So once again, you want to look at the active patient number at that practice, not looking at the total production number, because chances are you're going to have to go in network, you're going to lose some patients, the practice is not going to be as valuable to you as it was to the selling dentist. Whereas when you buy a practice that has 50 to 75% PPO plans, chances are a lot of the patients are going to stay. Because when you have a PPO plan, any dental office you go to, you are going to be paying the same amount of money. The patients can go to any office that they're in network with, and they're going to receive basically the same exact fee schedule and the same exact prices that they're going to have to pay, because they've already purchased a certain insurance plan that guaranteed that they were going to be receiving these rates. And so for them to change offices, they're not going to be saving any money. In fact, they might be spending more money because now they have to go do new comp exams. They have to go figure out, you know, all these things. When they already have records with you at the practice, PPO patients are the most likely to stay while also being a reasonable return on the amount of production that you're going to be receiving. With HMO plans and Medicaid plans, you're going to be making such a little amount of money per patient that you're going to be busy and you're not going to be making money. So that's just not something you want to do. When I bought my first practice, the dentist had been seeing a lot of HMO patients. The fee for a crown was like $200. That by the time you pay your lab fee, you're not going to be making any money. So I had to drop that HMO plan right away. There were no other providers in the area that were taking that HMO plan. So a lot of the patients were upset because this was the last practice that they could go to with that insurance in the area without having to drive 50, 60 miles to go somewhere out of town. And so while the patients were upset, it was frustrating. Luckily, a lot of them ended up switching over to different plans because they didn't want to drive 60 miles to go to another dentist. And so quite a few of those patients actually ended up staying. There was a little bit of a transition period because when patients sign up for a new insurance plan, oftentimes the plan has a waiting period where they can't receive any major services for the first 6 months. The insurance companies do this in order to keep patients from signing up, getting a lot of work done, and then canceling their plans. So they put this waiting period on. And because a lot of my patients had switched over from HMO to PPO plans, there was a waiting period. Obviously, I tried to get as many of those HMO patients to switch over to being cash paying patients. I came up with an in-office plan and I was able to get quite a few patients to switch to that, which was great. That, you know, you want to try that first. But the reality is you're going to have a lot of PPO plans and you're going to have to figure out the system. You're going to have to work with it. That's just the world we live in. The final thing that you're going to be looking at is the location of the practice. You can change basically everything about a practice except for the location. You can buy new equipment. You can hire new staff, you can repaint the walls, you can expand, you can even open up a new office across the street. You just can't move the office more than 5 or 10 minutes away, ideally even less than that, because you don't know if the patients are going to follow you if you move 20, 30 minutes away. You want to make sure that you are happy with the area of town that this practice is in and happy with the street that you're on and the general town and everything about that location, because that is the aspect of the business that you're not going to be able to change. Make sure that it's in an area of town that you want to live in. Chances are you're not going to want to live an hour away from this practice and have an hour-long commute every single day for the rest of your life. you're going to want to live close to the practice. You want to make sure it's an area of town that you enjoy living in, that you like, that you have places that you can go for lunch, that you have friends, that you have a church that you like to go to, that you have community events that you like in the area. Make sure that you're happy living in, if it's a rural area, make sure you like rural areas. If it's a city, make sure you like cities. Make sure that you like everything surrounding the practice and that you are happy being in this location long term. When you buy a dental practice, generally you're going to be working there for a very long time. Sometimes it's possible to sell a practice. I had a practice that I resold roughly a year after I bought it at one point, but I don't recommend doing that because there's a lot of risk involved with that. The reality is the most profitable thing you can do is buy a functional, profitable practice and then work there long term. A practice where you're able to make $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 a year, you're happy working there, and then just work there for the next 20 years. The key is just making sure that this is a place that you want to live for the next 20 years. So I hope these 7 criteria have given you an idea of what you are looking for in a practice to buy. Don't get caught up into the trap of just looking at production and thinking that's enough, because there are so many different aspects to buying a practice. And the truth is, the 7 things we went over today is only just scratching the surface. There are so many more aspects to buying a practice that you want to look at. Especially once you get into due diligence, you need to understand everything you can about this practice. You need to be digging all the way into the details to make sure that this practice that you are buying is actually what the seller or the practice broker is telling you the practice is. You want to be very confident that this practice is the practice that you want to be at long term. If you buy the wrong practice, it is going to be a massive headache. But if you buy the right practice, you are going to be buying an investment that is going to be paying incredible dividends into the future.